This is MSO Sports. I'm Rick Moore. We're back now with basketball insider Mike Grenier, sports journalist. Mike, how you doing?
We're doing okay. We're doing okay. The weather doesn't say it, but we are close to spring, which means NBA playoffs. I don't think of baseball as the spring. I still think the NBA playoffs until June, you know?
Okay. Well, we're 2 weeks into spring, and if you were 2 weeks into summer, it would be hot as a bozo. So as we speak here, we're in the middle of a nor'easter with snow and everything else, but it'll make the sun feel that much better when it finally does come out. Speaking of spring now and playoffs and so on, we're going to talk about the Celtics to start with, of course, as we always do, and they wrapped up the best record and home advantage in the NBA for the playoffs last night against the Thunder, which was a big win. But I got to ask you, I'm watching the game, and I had recorded it, so I didn't know if you had watched it or not. So I was going to text you last night, and I watched Jaylen Brown. It was either in the third quarter or the fourth quarter, turn the ball over on three consecutive plays. I don't know if you saw that.
And he finished with five turnovers to lead both teams. And it's surprising because usually the turnover leader, you expect to be the point guard because he's handling the ball most of the time. Right? But in the Celtics' case, it's often Jaylen Brown. So five turnovers, and you're right. He turned it over consecutive times. That's just, you know, I guess we have to accept that as part of his basketball nature because he turns it over a lot.
Well, I think
shooting 70% from the foul line.
I think the couple of things that I was thinking of is last night I was thinking, okay, you know, sports talk radio and the sports, they're going to crucify him in the morning. And then I thought, come on, Jaylen Brown, you're better than this. Then I read the papers this morning, he was the hero. He was the star of the game and he had all this other stuff. And then I also read that he had been nursing, I think it's his left wrist. And every time he lost the ball, he was dribbling on his left side.
He tends to dribble the ball. That's when most of his turnovers happen, whether he has a wrist injury or not, is with the left hand. And but you know what? That's part and parcel of him as an overall player. And of course, sometimes people tend to overlook how all the great things he makes. Crazy shots, especially the mid-range jumper, has become a phenomenal shot for him in an age where a lot of players just settle for the three-pointer. Jaylen Brown is still taking it to the basket, and he's still making. You can tell he's worked a lot on his mid-range jumper.
Oh yeah,
the two-point shot. And you know, I happen to check his stats, Rick, and he's actually shooting 50% from the floor this year.
Wow!
And not many players shoot 50% from the floor, and he's shooting like 35-36% on threes, which is not bad. It's okay, but you know, when you're talking, he's averaging. He takes a lot of shots. He's averaging 23.5 points a game, basically. But he's a 50% shooter. You don't see that from a guy that's a non-center or a non-forward like a Porzingis, who might be close to the basket, for example. Jaylen Brown takes three-pointers. He takes long-range two-pointers. He takes driving to the basket. So to shoot 50% is really an excellent, excellent percentage while you're the second-best scorer on your team behind Jason Tatum. Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Zion, as we know, is a powerhouse physically. And you know, I give Zion credit, and early in the season people were criticizing for his putting on weight again, but he seemed to lose it pretty quickly, and he's more trim now. And he's able to play 35, 36 minutes. And he can overpower many players physically. But Jaylen Brown did a really good job. Jaylen Brown is so quick. He could handle Zion's quickness, and he could defend him and physically keep him away from the basket as much as you can keep Zion Williamson away from the basket. He did a great job on him. And, of course, the Celtics won that game, I think, after losing back-to-back games to a very poor Atlanta team. So they needed that when they got it, and Jaylen Brown was a big part of it. But, yeah, as a matter of fact, and funny you should mention Jaylen Brown's defense, because I saw a comment from none other than Jason Tatum pushing Jaylen Brown to be on the all-defensive team this year, first team. He thinks that Jaylen Brown's defense has been that consistent and that good, he deserves a spot on the all-NBA all-defensive team, which is quite a compliment from a teammate. And I don't think Jason Tatum pulled that one out of thin air. I think he really feels that Brown has put in that kind of defensive performance all year.
It seems that Jaylen Brown takes pride in his defense too, especially after that that New Orleans game when he said he was beat up, he was punished, but you know he was proud of the job that he did on on Zion, who's a much bigger guy, and Jaylen Brown is no shrinking violet. He's a good sized guy, of course.
Now, and you know, the other thing, Jaylen Brown is he takes it to the. Sometimes he's, well, it's hard to say who's more physical taking it to the basket, Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, because Jaylen's not afraid to push stronger guys who are guarding him to the basket, because he's got a quickness advantage a lot of times, and he makes these sensational layups, or he pulls up for a foul line jumper against a bigger guy who's pushing him around, and obviously he's found a rhythm in making some really tough-looking shots, like fadeaway jumpers that Tatum makes. Jaylen Brown can also make them. So, yeah, I think he's, again, a guy who's taken a step forward this season along with Tatum, and you add Porzingis to the mix, and that's why the Celtics are in the position they are. 60 wins again, Rick. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment.
It is. I wonder how contagious it is when the teammates see guys like Derek White just hustle both ways, you know, 180 feet or whatever it is, both ways, all the time, even if they get stuffed, even if they turn the ball over, and Drew Holiday doing the same thing. Yeah. And then I just wonder how contagious that is, because I know in the New Orleans game, I think the first quarter, they were asleep again, you know, after Atlanta. But then all of a sudden, they did. They flipped the switch. And when those guys are on, you watch it. What did the coach call them last night? He said they're like a Ferrari.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because they do like to get up and down the floor. I was concerned for a few games because I think you're in the part of the season, Rick, where the Celtics were close to nailing down the best record anyway. It's almost looked like, it almost looked like they took two nights off when they played Atlanta and lost back-to-back games, including one in which they had a 30-point lead. They kind of turned off the Ferrari, and they put the keys back in the doorway because they just seemed to take those two nights off.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of woke up a little bit in the New Orleans game. I still thought the last few games, until they played Oklahoma City last night, that they were kind of cruising. They had it in cruise control. And then all of a sudden last night, I felt they were playing a very good Oklahoma City team that did not have its best player. We should point that out. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was in street clothes last night with an injury, and he averages 30 points a game. But it's still a good OKC team. And the Celtics, you know, won by 35, and they pulled away in the second half. And, you know, I think now with six games remaining, and five of those games are at home, and the only road game being at Milwaukee, which is struggling like crazy under Doc Rivers. And you wonder what Mazzulla's, this is my mystery question now. It's like, what is Mazzulla going to do these last six games? All right, you want to play the starters a certain amount of minutes, but you don't want to take a chance on injury. So do you sit out Tatum for a couple of games? Do you sit out Jaylen Brown for a couple of games, meaning all 48 minutes, have them be in street clothes, make up some fake injury and say they're injured? Or do you want to play him for 28, 29, 30 minutes so they will be fully prepared for the playoffs? I don't know what the answer to that question is, because we've seen teams over the years play it both ways.
Right.
Sometimes it can backfire if you rest your starters, because if you sit them down for a week or two and they start up the fire again, you know, you start up the fire. Let's say you play the Knicks in the first round. They're going to be a fired-up team. You know, actually, it looks like they might play Philadelphia. Looks like a likely first round. I was looking at it today. Philly might be the first-round opponent. And ordinarily, a week ago, you would have said, pretty easy. Philly's been nothing since Embiid went down with an injury and had surgery. But now Embiid came back a couple of nights ago, and you say to yourself, uh-oh, all of a sudden, this is a vastly different Philadelphia team. So to me, I would play. I guess I'm no coach, I'm no expert, but I guess I would play Tatum and Brown, but limit them, and especially Horford, to Al Horford being an older guy. I wouldn't play him any more than 25, 26 minutes, no matter what the circumstances of the game are. You know?
Well, I noticed last night that, and maybe the game before that too, but Mazzulla did shorten the bench, which surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe he wanted the starters to stay sharp. OKC, I thought they came out with a mindset of, okay, this is a good team. We're going to try to take care of business. We're going to play hard. And then, sure enough, you know, Mazzulla in the fourth quarter knew he could have gone to anybody on the bench because they had a huge lead. But I thought it was a good sign last night. They took the game seriously. Whereas some of the games, it's almost like the doldrums of the season.
Mm-hmm.
They knew they were going to have best record anyway. And as well as Denver's been playing in the West and Minnesota, now neither team can overtake the Celtics for best record. So Mazzulla is going to have it's sort of a pleasant problem, I guess, in deciding how many minutes you want guys like Horford and Tatum and D. White and all the stuff. Porzingis, how much do you want to play them? Because can you imagine Porzingis, say, playing 31 minutes in the game and tweaking an ankle and not being ready for the first round? I mean, that would be a disaster. So I guess he's got to be careful. But at the same time, you don't want them to lose their rhythm and that the starting five already has. The chemistry and the rhythm that they have has been fantastic. So you don't want to lose that either. So it's kind of a fine line that they're walking right now. I guess any other coach in the NBA would love to have that problem.
Well, yeah. Well,
that record wrapped up, right?
Yeah, of course. And the thing I've noticed also lately, Mike, is that they're still super reliant on the three.
Yes.
But they also do know how to go to the basket, which is a little bit different from last year.
Right. Sometimes I do get upset that they so rely on the three, but they take the most threes of any teams in the NBA, and they also make the most threes. Now, my question is, let's say they play a Miami in the second round or something like that, all right? Assuming they beat, let's say, a Philadelphia. Philadelphia will have to have a play-in game against either Atlanta or the Chicago Bulls. So I'm rooting for the Bulls or the Atlanta Hawks to beat the Philly. I don't want to face Embiid in the first round. I think that would be a tough first-round series. So the easiest route would be for the Celtics to play the Bulls or the Atlanta Hawks. So, but when you get to the better opponents, let's say like Miami or let's say Milwaukee in the third round or whatever, those teams are going to come out and guard the three much better than some team in regular season. So you wonder if the Celtics are going to rely on that three as much as they did in the regular season, or do they have an alternate plan where, you know, you still take a lot of threes, but you still want Tatum to take it to the basket more often. You want Porzingis to post underneath. You want D. White to take it to the basket. All these guys can shoot the three. And, of course, you know, if you're going to talk the three, Sam Hauser has been out of this world this year. I think that's the factor. He and Peyton Pritchard have played so much more this season in terms of minutes and in terms of efficiency and making baskets at critical times. Those two guys have been terrific, Hauser and Pritchard. So I think Mazzulla can actually count on those guys in the playoffs as complementary players to the big five. You know,
I think Pritchard is a real spark plug. He tends to pick up the offense at least in terms of speed and quickness when he's in there.
Yeah, he's not afraid to take it to the basket either. And how many times do we see that little guy come down with an offensive rebound?
Yeah,
he's scrappy. You know, he went to the University of Oregon, and he's like, you know, he's like 6 feet maybe, 6'1", maybe. He's, you know, with small guys like that, they always list them as being a little bit bigger than they actually are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to rebound like he does underneath on the offensive end, it surprised me this year. But he's just a tough guy, and he knows how to play the game. You know, the more minutes he gets, the better he seems to get. So, you know, I think that Mazzulla will pick his spots in the playoffs in terms of using Pritchard, but I think Pritchard is a very effective weapon off the bench. I also think that Sam Hauser, I mean, we've seen him sometimes hit 8 out of 9 three-pointers, and there was that other game where he hit 10 three-pointers and then got injured. Otherwise, he might have threatened Stephon Curry's record of 13 and Klay Thompson's overall record of 14 threes. So Hauser and Pritchard have been two outstanding weapons off the bench. And, of course, you know, Horford, you know, really technically comes off the bench as a sixth man. So he also has amazed me this year in terms of his consistency for his age. And I think they've done a good job of resting him on back-to-back situations. So he's got fresh legs. He doesn't look tired at all.
Since Holiday has come back from his injury, he looks to me almost like a secret weapon because when everything else gets bogged down, either on offense or defense, all of a sudden, there's Holiday.
Right. And, you know, I know when he came back, what he called a dead arm, he had one game where he shot like 1 for 10 or 1 for 11 overall, three-pointers. But last night against OKC, he looked much sharper, hit a couple of threes. The thing about him is, like, you kind of forget that he's involved in the offense because there are so many good scorers on the floor. Then all of a sudden you look at the end of the night, he's got 16 or 15 or 14, and he's only taken 8 or 9 or 10 shots. And of course, he's a disruptive force on defense. That's what I love about him. He's a disruptive force on defense. He gets into the mix. He's not afraid to go underneath and battle people, even the big, strong people. He's just a defensive wizard. He's just a great player, and that's because he's had 14 years of experience, and he's faced every type of situation in his career. So he wants to win it so badly because I don't think he feels like he was snubbed by Milwaukee or anything like that, but he feels like, as he said earlier in the year, Milwaukee got the guy they wanted, meaning Damian Lillard. He says, I'm happy here in Boston. He feels that's his best shot of winning a championship in Boston. So, you know, it's a great fit for the Celtics. He's a team guy. He never complains about not getting enough shots in terms of shot distribution, because you got superstars like, you know, Jaylen Brown and you know, all these other guys, you know. So he's content with his role. He's happy with it. He's as tough and ornery as you can imagine.
All right, let's shift gears, because we're going to talk playoff strategy next time. But tell me about Jalen Brunson.
Jalen Brunson, wow. 61 points in the game. He had 61 points in the game earlier this week. He did take 47 shots. I don't know what he was doing that night. And he hit 25 for 47. He also had a 40-point game a couple nights ago. So he's going crazy. And he's obviously the leader of the Knicks now, no question about it. And the Knicks' problem, however, is they will not have their second-best player, Julius Randle, available for the playoffs because he dislocated his shoulder and they opted for season-ending surgery. So much to the dismay of Stephen A. Smith, who predicted that the Knicks would face the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals and would give the Celtics a rough go of it, Julius Randle will not be available. So there's going to be more on Jalen Brunson's plate. But he has some good players around him. Dante DiVincenzo out of Villanova, who was formerly with the Milwaukee Bucks and played with Pat Connaughton as a teammate. He's had a great year. He's had games of 30, 35 points, where he used to be like a 10-points-a-game guy. All of a sudden, we've had games of 25, 26 points. So, you know, he's an additional weapon that they have. They're kind of like a lunch bucket brigade under Coach Tom Thibodeau. Jalen Brunson is a true star, almost a superstar, and the rest of the guys are really workmanlike guys who contribute 15, 20 points, and you know they're going to be a tough team in the playoffs. But do they have enough to beat the Celtics? I don't think so. But they could definitely face the Celtics, even in the Eastern Conference Final.
All right, Mike, let's turn over to college March Madness, which is over now in April, but we're into April. And let's start with the obvious. In our pregame warm-up, we were talking, you were just talking about Caitlin Clark and what an amazing athlete she is.
Yeah, and really, she has elevated women's sports in general, and it's particularly the women's basketball forces, to unprecedented heights, to the point where, you know, the ratings, this is so unheard of in the past. As great as UConn has been over the years, and I know Tim Kearns is a big UConn women's basketball fan, and sure enough, they've been a great team over the years with many championships under Coach Gino Auriemma. And, you know, you've had teams like South Carolina being 35-0, and they certainly draw some national interest. But Caitlin Clark has taken the game to another level. I mean, obviously, Iowa has advanced to the Final Four and will face UConn Friday night in Cleveland, Ohio. But in terms of interest, ticket prices have gone through the ceiling like never before for women's basketball. And the TV ratings have gone through the roof, where it's hard to imagine that a women's basketball game, when they played LSU, Iowa versus LSU, Monday night in Albany, New York, the TV ratings were higher than any NFL game this past season.
Oh, my goodness.
They were higher than any of the men's NCAA tournament games. And they were projected to be as good as just about any event of the last 10, 15, 20 years, certainly the highest women's basketball ratings in history, okay? So, and that's basically because of Caitlin Clark. I mean, she is a unicorn. Against LSU, a team that beat Iowa for the national championship last year by 17 points, 102-85. Caitlin Clark had 41 points. She had 12 assists. She had 7 rebounds, I believe. She has some great teammates, but she is such an exceptional passer. She reminds me of a female Jokic, right? Except that she plays the guard position. She passes like Bob Cousy used to in the 1960s, or Ernie DiGregorio used to be with Providence. Just an exceptional passer. She has court vision like no one we've ever seen in the women's game. And there have been a lot of great women's players over the years, and Gino Auriemma has had many of them at UConn. But even he had to admit the other night that Caitlin Clark is the best player. He said she's the best player of all time. Now, a week or so earlier, he had said that Paige Buick, his point guard, is the best player in the country. And in a post-game press conference after Caitlin Clark got 41, Gino Auriemma says, "Forget what I said about Paige. my page being the best player in the country, Caitlin Clark is the best player of all time. Now, are you sure he said that for the media's purposes?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he told Paige Buchus in the locker room, Paige, I still believe in you that you're the best player in the country. And he actually made a good point, Rick, because he's been asked whether he should have recruited Caitlin Clark, whether UConn should have recruited. And he replied to that and said, well, we recruited Paige Buchus very early in her career, high school, and she said she promised us she would come to UConn. So I really didn't see a point in trying to get Caitlin Clark because they play the same position.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that viewpoint because he's surrounded right now Paige Buchus with other excellent players, and that's why they have a shot at the national championship. But Caitlin Clark, her dream was to go to UConn.
Oh, wow.
UConn was not one of the schools that came courting her when she was a junior at Des Moines, Illinois Catholic School, small Catholic school in Iowa, whereas every other school came courting. And Caitlin Clark actually was committed to Notre Dame and Muffet McGraw, who had won a couple national championships. And it's a strong Catholic family that Caitlin Clark comes from. And so her mother was thrilled with that decision. But sort of almost at the last minute, Caitlin Clark decided she wanted to stay home and go to University of Iowa and try to elevate that program to heights that they hadn't achieved yet. And so she had to make the phone call to Muffet McGraw, and she said to her parents, I'm afraid to call the Notre Dame coach. She's an intimidating person.
Yep.
So she finally made the call, and Muffet McGraw, regretted losing her because obviously she'd become the player that she did, scoring more points than Pete Maravich did in his career. But Caitlin Clark is a singular talent. It'll be interesting to see if she can carry them all the way to the national championship. I'd say probably they might be a favorite over Connecticut, but obviously if they face South Carolina in the final, South Carolina is 35-0 and in the one team in the country all season. So it would be a great matchup. We'll see what happens. But obviously Caitlin Clark, her place in basketball history is secure. She's going to be the number one pick in the WNBA draft. And to me, she's certainly the greatest. I've seen a lot of the great women's players the last 50 years, and there's been so many great ones. A lot of them have played at UConn and many other schools. But Caitlin Clark is by far on her own planet, as far as I'm concerned.
Great story, great story. And as a sidebar, Mike, you mentioned passing. One of the things that I've noticed lately, I watch the old films of Bob Cousy, but I watch the videos of Larry Bird, and it just astounds me to this day what he could do. But it also requires teammates who are ready to catch the ball.
Right, and you know what? I would love to sit with Larry Bird for 5 minutes and ask him what he thinks of Caitlin Clark's passing.
Mm-hmm.
Because she fires NBA type passes through people's legs and it's through small openings, and she expects her teammates to catch the ball on the bounce.
Yep.
And obviously, women are not as athletic as the men's teams. Okay, that's obvious. But she expects her teammates to catch those passes, and they've learned from practicing with Caitlin Clark for 4 years that they better catch the passes because she's going to put it right on the money. And it was surprising against LSU the other night that Caitlin Clark's teammates were still able to get ahead of the LSU defense, and she would make these long passes to teammates for easy baskets. And Kim Mulkey, who was really a crazy coach. I'm surprised that her pregame preparation did not include more of getting back on defense quicker than they did, because Caitlin Clark is so quick to get rid of the ball to an open teammate 60 feet down the floor.
Wow.
And if you saw the end of the game, maybe the most amazing passing Caitlin Clark made was after they won the game. She was half court with the ball, and she spotted her brother 10 or 15 rows into the stands and fired a strike to him in the stands.
Did he catch it?
Yeah, he caught it. He caught it because he's used to playing around with her, okay? And she fired a pass into the stands, a strike that you'd see a great pitcher would make, like Justin Verlander, you know what I'm saying? So she's just such a sharp player. She is the most competitive, I think, women's player that I've ever seen in my life. I think you, in terms of her competitiveness, you can match her with any player we've ever seen, man or woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
All right. Finally, Mike, predictions on this weekend's games.
Okay. Well, I think in the men's division, as well as Purdue has played with Zach Edey, and what a great matchup that would be against UConn, because they have a big man too, and both teams have great all-around teams. But I would pick UConn to repeat as champion. In the women's side of things, I haven't seen North Carolina State, which is one of the four teams. I've seen the other teams. I don't know. I think that Iowa is a sentimental favorite. I do think they can beat UConn in the semifinal, and I believe they would beat South Carolina in the final. And they did beat South Carolina in last year's tournament. South Carolina was a great team. So they're my sentimental favorite, and I think they do have the goods to take it all the way.
All right. That's Basketball Insider Mike Grenier with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.